Les colloques du Collège de France.
Hello everyone. First of all, I would like to thank Hugues for the nice invitation. This is my first time at Collège de France, so I'm quite happy. So, as Hugues said during the introduction, I run a lab at Institut Curie. What we do is we study DNA repair, various types of DNA repair, double stranded repair, but also base excision repair. And we mainly do that in conditions where the main repair pathways, the main repair pathway, which is homologous recombination, HR in short, is not functional. And this mainly occurs in some type of cancer. So we use cancer as a model to study DNA repair, to discover a new mechanism, and eventually pathways. So today I'm going to tell you two stories from my lab, one that was published recently. And talks about DNA repair during mitosis, cell divisions. And another one that is unpublished and is talking about base excision repair, uracil, consequence of uracil misincorporation into the DNA. So you all know DNA repair is essential for life, conserved throughout evolution because it prevents genome instability. However, in many instances, and especially it's true in cancer, DNA repair is not functional. These mainly occur through mutations. So in many different cancer types, you have defect in DNA repair pathways, and that leads to the activation of other pathways that would compensate for those mutations. And the goal of that is to limit the extent of genome instability, because you can't have too much genome instability. So even bad cancer cells need somehow to compensate and to control its level of genomic instability. So this is what my lab studies, these compensating pathways. And we study that in a context of defect in HR, homologous recombinations, which mainly occurs in breast ovarian tumors, but not only. So those breast and ovarian cancer, they are frequently have defect in HR, in homologous recombinations, and that leads to the activation of another enzyme that is called PARP, PARP1, that limits genomic stability. And that's been known for two decades now, two Nature papers from Thomas Seledé and Anna Ashworth that shows that actually the result of that is that if you block PARP1, if you inhibit PARP1 by inhibitors, you will kill cells with defect in HR, leaving the other cells, which are proficient in HR, unarmed. And that's the principle of synthetic lethality, the inhibition of one enzyme kill a cell with a specific genetic context. And more recently, that was my work as a postdoc in Alain Andrea's lab at the Dana Farber. We found that the reason why those HR deficient cells, they rely on PARP is because PARP is doing many things, but one of the things it does, it brings a polymerase that is called Polteta. And this polymerase is actually repairing breaks in the absence of homologous recombination. However, the mechanism by which PARP polteta functions and functions in DNA repair and genome instability in the absence of HR is poorly understood, and this is how I set my lab, claiming that, at least proposing that I will study, that we will study those mechanisms. So what kind of mechanism are we talking about? We are talking about double-strand break repair pathways. Double-strand breaks are breaks that damage both strands of the DNA. As you know, they are not that frequent. They are much less frequent than bases damage, as KG talked about. And they are repaired, those double-strand breaks, mainly through, they were thought to be repaired by two main pathways, non-homologous end joining, that functions mainly in G1, and HR, homologous recombination, and because it uses a sister chromatid as a template to copy the chromosome and fix the breaks, it needs replication. So it functions in S. And interestingly, over the recent years, the evidence that those two players are not the only one, but a subclass of pathway exists that has been called alternative. Alternative because they are not NHEJ nor HR. So they're basically everything we don't understand and we don't know. And within those guys, there is the pathway mediated by this Polteta polymerase that uses microhomology. So it sits actually in between NHEJ and HR, uses components of NHEJ and HR, so it's an in-between pathways that can fix the breaks. And it can fix the breaks alternatively of an HEJ. So the first description of alternative engineering is in mice that were deficient in an HEJ, the breaks could be repaired by these alternative pathways. And we have shown that in case you don't have HR, this pathway can also compensate for the loss of HR. So this is relevant for cancer, because in case you have mutation in genes that encodes HR proteins, such as BRCA1, BRCA2, and others, then Pol Theta becomes essential to maintain genomic stability. So if you block Pol Theta, you kill those cells. So because of that scientific relationship, we and many others, pharmas, companies, have started to develop inhibitors of Pol Theta. And there are now in clinical trials. This is the two that were published, and many others are coming. So people are, like, there is a lot of effort and money put to develop new drugs for the treatment of those cancer, alternative to PARP. This said the mechanism by which Pol Theta functions and maintains and repairs the break in the absence of HR wasn't really understood. So this is one of the first project my lab took, is to understand the mechanism of action of these Pol Theta polymerase. And reason for the lack of knowledge on these Pol Theta polymerase is because the tools to study the polymerase didn't exist. There is no antibody. We cannot detect it in human cells. But it was not that studied in human cells. So we built the first cell lines where we could observe Pol Theta. We tagged the endogenous locus using CRISPR. We insert various fluorescent tags. And we could observe the polymerase forming foci. So foci is concentration of the polymerase onto DNA. And these foci localized to double-strand breaks. This is gamma H2X, a marker of DNA double-strand breaks. So we were quite happy showing that we can actually see the polymerase in human cells. It goes to the break, so it does what it's supposed to do. So we can actually start it to study it. But very surprisingly, and I was actually super concerned when the postdoc showed me those data, is that in cells that do not have HR, where we expected to have a lot more Pol Theta, we couldn't see the recruitment of Pol Theta to the break. So this meant either two things, that the hypothesis on which I built my lab was wrong, which is not good, or that the tool is not working, or actually that we don't understand. And thankfully, the answer came that we did not understand what was really going on. And the answer came from a live experiment analysis. So Camille, the postdoc, decided to follow, because the Pol Theta was tagged with DFP, we could follow it live during the whole cell cycle of the whole life of the cell. And she did that in, so HR deficient cells, so BRCA2 knockout, it's a knockout, so we can't see Pol Theta at the break. And she followed it during replication. So we marked here, she tagged the pcNA, which travels with replication. So when you see red, it's the cells are replicating, it's in S phase. And as you can see here, the movie hasn't started. You have red foci, those are pcNA foci, you can't see Theta. Try to start that, and as okay, we are still in red. You can't see Theta. The movie is not working. I'm gonna start again. Yes, and here the cell exits S phase, and here you can see the polymerase. I have to stop clicking. again, throughout mitosis until the next G1. So that was actually super surprising. It meant that during replication, Theta functions somehow downstream of HR, either because, I mean, we don't know what's going on, but it needs HR to go at the break. But as soon as the cells exit from replication, actually this happens at the very late G2 phase, then Theta goes at the break independently of HR throughout mitosis until the next G1. So we decided to focus on mitosis, and this is the mitotic cells, mitotic chromosomes. In cells that do not have HR. In red, you have double-strand breaks, and in green, you have Theta. Okay, so Theta, Pol Theta, the polymerase, goes to the break during mitosis independently of HR. This is what this scheme shows. But why is it so surprising, and how did it get there? It's surprising because for two decades, you have a lot of publications showing that in mitosis, double strongback repair is shut down. So you can't repair double strongback in mitosis because this is harmful. If you do so, you will have chromosome translocation, telomere fusion, and eventually death. So how come Pol theta gets to the break while all the other repair factors are evicted from the chromatin? The mechanism through which those repair factors and all those guys encode four proteins that function in the classical repair, double strongback repair pathway, NHEJ, HR. So all those guys are evicted from chromatin through phosphorylation. They get massively phosphorylated by the mitotic kinases, PLK1, CDK1, or RB, and their phosphorylations block prevents their recruitment to the BRAC. So we thought that maybe Pol theta gets phosphorylated as well. Actually, many proteins during mitosis get phosphorylated, and this is the case. So this is the Pol theta IP here in mitosis or in S phase. It gets massively phosphorylated, and dephosphorylation is prevented by inhibition of PLK1. So we show that during mitosis, Pol theta, like the other repair factors, get phosphorylated. And we collaborated with Sofizin at the CEA. We perform NMR to precisely map the site of phosphorylation. And we identify 10 sites of phosphorylation, of PLK1 phosphorylation, onto Pol theta. Pol theta is a very large protein, 300 kilodalton. It's not easy to study. And it's made of this alpha fold. I know not everyone is a big fan of alpha fold, but it can be useful. So Pol theta, actually, it hasn't been crystallized yet, probably because it's very big or unstable. But what we know, it's made of a polymerase and an AKs, which are conserved, structured, and that form a globular domain. And 2/3 of the protein is made of this, what we call disordered region. We don't know how it's folded. We don't know the structure of it. And because it's disorder, it's not conserved through evolution. But interestingly, so all the sites of phosphorylation are located within this disordered region, that are very close one to another, and this disordered region is not conserved, but the site of phosphorylation are. So this means two things, that the sites of phosphorylation have been conserved throughout evolution, and they're probably essential for the function of the polymerase. And this is what shows here. You have a patch of four serines that are highly conserved and phosphorylated. So what we found is that actually the phosphorylation of Pol theta allows the binding of the polymerase to the mitotic break. How it does that is because this is a peptide of Pol theta that is either phosphorylated or non-phosphorylated. It encodes it encompasses four phosphorylation sites. And these allow the binding to TOPBP1, the globular domain. I mean, TOPBP1 is a DDR protein that is not effector in DNA repair, but allow the recruitment of various DNA repair factors to the BRAC through BRCT globular domains. So BRCT recruits phosphopeptide. And we found that phosphorylation of Pol theta tightly binds to the BRCT, one of the BRCT of TOPBP1. And TOPBP1 was the only other protein that they are known to go to the mitotic BRACs. So this shows that the reason why Pol theta gets the phosphorylation of Pol theta allows the binding to the mitotic breaks through a direct interaction with TOPBP1. It is the affinity of Pol theta TOPBP1 binding that is very high when the theta is phosphorylated and quite low when it's not phosphorylated. So next, what we decided to do is like to study the function of this phosphorylation in cells. So we complemented Pol theta knockout cells with either wild type or phosphomutant. This is classical molecular biology. And we looked first at the localization of the enzyme to the mitotic breaks by looking at the foci formation. So in a normal condition, Pol theta, and this is HR proficient. So when HR is there, Pol theta can form foci throughout cell cycle in S phase and also in mitosis. But when we looked at the phosphomutants, they were still functional in S phase, but were unable to localize to the mitotic breaks, meaning that there are really two separate pathways in which Pol theta functions, one in S that functions downstream of HR, probably using templates created by homologous recombination, and one in mitosis that is HR independent but rely on this mitotic phosphorylation. So what does it do at mitotic break? We actually showed that the double strand breaks can be repaired during mitosis, and this we showed that for the first time. We use many different assays to prove that mitotic repair exists, and this is in vitro repair assay where we incubate mitotic cellular extract with a template, and we look if the template can be sealed. And in normal condition, we set that to 1. If you block PLK1, this decreases. If you do it at Polter knockout, mitotic repair is highly impaired, can be rescued by the wild type, but not the phospho mutant. Showing the phosphorylation of Polteta in mitosis, although it's a localization of the break, but more importantly, the repair of the double strand break during mitosis. This is what the scheme shows. So it repairs the break in mitosis independently of HR. How is that important for cells that do not have HR? And the answer came from survival assay showing that it's actually essential. So as I told you, there is a pure synthetic lethality, genetic synthetic lethality between HR and theta. So you can, this is surviving fraction by clonogenic assay in Polteta knockout cells. And isogenic controls, if you knock down BRCA, you kill the cells, you can rescue by adding back the wild-type Polteta, but not the phospho mutant. Showing that the function of Polteta in repairing the double strand break in mitosis, it's essential for the survival of cells that do not have HR. And this is actually makes sense. And it places, this Polteta mediated end joining. We call MMEJ because it uses micromorphology, so it's micromorphology-mediated end joining. It places this pathway, the canonical pathway, during mitosis. And it's nice because now we have the full picture where double strand breaks can be repaired throughout the cell cycle, which occurs mainly by an HEG1, HR during replication, and if a break escapes HR, then it will be fixed during mitosis by MMEJ to avoid any transmission of a break from the mother to the daughter cell. And yes, this was recently published by our group together with a companion paper by Annual Sphere Group. And we believe it opens a new field, at least for DNA repair of investigation. And one of the questions, we are now trying to solve the mechanistic details of this mitotic repair, whether it's only mediated by Polteta or there are any other repair factors that functions, what are the signature that are arise as a consequence of mitotic repair. And one of the questions we are really interested in is to understand how repair can occur within chromosomes that are highly condensed. As you know, when cells enter mitosis, chromosomes are folded by the condensing complex, which through loop extrusion mechanisms will fold the chromosome into a mitotic chromosomes. And it's not easy to understand how the repair can occur in those conditions. So now I'm moving to the second part of my talk, which will be about uracil. So I told you 20 years ago, the discovery of PARP. PARP inhibitors have been used in clinics since 2014, a decade now. They were thought that they would change the fate of those tumors. Unfortunately, despite the fact that this is the result of the first clinical trials in ovarian cancer, BRCA mutated, despite the fact that PARP inhibitors, patients with PARP inhibitors do better, there is, when we look at progression-free survival, that the way that patients are, they are better, but there is no much change in overall survival, and that's a big problem. And the reason for that is because there's a lot of resistance to PARP. Almost half of the patients that are thought that would respond to PARP actually do not respond, and the other half, they develop resistance during the course of the treatment. And the other main issues is that PARP inhibitor, given long-term, have side effects, which is mainly on the blood tissues. So PARP inhibitors were thought to be a targeted therapy, but actually PARP having a lot of functions, we don't know if it's really that targeted. Maybe Polteta inhibitors will be more efficient, and maybe there would be less side effects of their use in clinics. But we don't know yet if we will have in the future inhibitors that would be efficient in clinic. So there is, I mean, there are a lot of questions in the field of what can we think next of PARP inhibitors or Pol Theta inhibitors, and what can we do for the tumors that are resistant to PARP, because so far there is nothing. And this is, so to make a long story short, we use what are called PDO, PDXs, in organoids derived from PDXs. So PDXs are xenograft made of patient's tumor. So there is a lab at Curie run by Elisabetta Marangoni. She takes tumor from the patients, she engrafts it into mice. It's from PDX, and from that PDX we can use organoids, which are nice tools to study, but we can use them to study many things. So this is a response to PARP inhibitors. This is a triple negative, so it's a breast tumors, non-BRCA. Resistant to PARP, and you have a BRCA mutant, highly sensitive. However, there are many tumors that are resistant to PARP, and this is the case of those two tumors, and they are resistant to PARP because they can reacquire during the course of evolution some HR functions. This is extremely frequent. And for those tumors, there is no therapy. What we found is that those tumors, the PARP sensitive, but also the PARP resistant, they remain sensitive to a combination of drug, FGRD plus TAS. What are those guys? The anti-metabolite. What do? They interfere with the pool of nucleotides. FGRD blocks the thymidine synthase, so it blocks the synthase of thymidine 3-phosphate, so the pool of thymidine. While TAS 1114, it's blocking the DUTPase, which recycles the thymidine 3-phosphate to thymidine monophosphate. So when you combine those two drugs, the consequence of that is that you would increase the pool of uracil and decrease the pool of thymidine. Okay, uracil and thymidine are highly similar, and the polymerase can differentiate between a uracil and thymidine. The reason why there is no of uracil into the DNA is because the pool of uracil is maintained low, so stochastically the polymerase will incorporate thymidine. But if you change the balance, the polymerase will incorporate uracil. And this is what's going on. So when we use those two drugs, we have plenty of uracil into the DNA. There are actually two instances where uracil can be incorporated to DNA. As I told you, misincorporation, when the pool of uracil is going up and the pool of thymidine is going down. So then uracil gets misincorporated. And then you have this deamination of cytosine, so it's damaged basis, which occurs spontaneously through deaminases, like the so-called APOBEC, which is important for the constitution of the antibody repertoire, but also can occur in cancer through overexpression of these deaminases. Because uracil has nothing to do, at least we think, has nothing to do with DNA, there is a specific pathways that have been evolved, conserved through evolution, to fix those lesions. It's a subclass of base excision repair, and it's specific for uracil, and the specificity comes from the use of glycosylases that can recognize uracil, DOC uridine incorporated to DNA. So those two glycosylases are called HUNG and SMUG1. What they do, they cleave the deoxyribose, leaving the sugar backbone naked, and this becomes a template for an endonuclease, AP1, a basic apyrimidine endonuclease that will create a nick. Nick will be filled by a polymerase, and DNA will be fixed, preventing genome instability, maintaining genome stability. So uracil, when it gets into the DNA, it's excised and fixed by uracil excision repair. Told you to initiate uracil excision repair, you need the glycosylase, so that will cleave the deoxyribose. One functions during replication, UNG, UNG, because it binds to pcNA. So it excises uracil in newly synthesized DNA. It's super efficient. So every time you have a uracil, then it excises it and fixes it. Conversely, SMUG1 is not very, it has a very slower catalytic activity than UNG. And the reason of that is that it functions in non-replicative chromatin. So you have two glycosylases. One deals with the non-replicative chromatin, and it's slow. One is very fast and efficient. It's bound to pcNA and clean the newly synthesized DNA. What we found is that if you block UNG, this is UNG knockout mice, cells, UNG knockout cells, so if you don't have UNG, then SMUG gets trapped or actually bound onto chromatin. Okay, it compensates for the lot of UNG. It's binding to all those uracil. Fine. But the problem of that is this creates breaks, massive breaks. And now we're not talking about single strand breaks, which are the consequence of basic gene repair, but double strand breaks. So when you have a base that is damaged, when you initiate basic gene repair, you should not have double strand breaks. It's a single strand break repair pathways, which is not toxic. Creating double strand break is a problem. So how is this possible? So I'm going to not enter into the details, but what we found is that in the absence of UNG, this is UNG knockout cells, and this is wild type cells, UNG knockout cells, and we use this combination of drugs that kills the tumors, but then what we do at specific concentration is we massively incorporate uracil. So if you massively incorporate uracil and you can't remove it during replication, then SMUG gets trapped to those uracil. With another protein that HMC has, that is known to protect the abasic sites that are created by the glycosylase, abasic site beating the DNA without the deoxyribose, because it's very fragile. So HMCS goes there, and it's covalently bound to those sites, and this, I mean, correlates with the presence of double strand breaks. How is this possible? Well, the Western blot is cropped, but fine. This is the UNG knockout cells, and what we do is, I don't know. I mean, I know, but I cannot guide you. Yes, so what we found is that if we remove SMUG1, so in the absence of UNG, uracil gets massively incorporated, and then SMUG1 goes there and binds to the uracil. And then this correlates with the presence of massive breaks, double strand breaks, which is not normal. What we found is that if we remove SMUG, so we have even more uracil, then there is no more breaks. It means that it's not the deoxyribose that is toxic, it's not the uracil that is toxic, but it's misrepaired by SMUG that is messing up with genome stability. All right? And what's going on is that, oops, you don't have UNG, then this is, in red, this is the uracil, then SMUG comes in, excites the uracil, and then it creates these aphasic sites, which are then shielded by this HMCES, which is covalently bound to the chromatin. And this prevents the normal repair by basic gene repair, and is creating breaks, double strand breaks, through the collision of the replication fork, because these guys are slow runners. So in the next cell cycle, replication would come and collapse because of the presence of these proteins that is shielding the basic site. All right? What is the function of that? I don't know. I mean, it has to have a function. But what happens to those lesions is interesting. Because actually, I told you, it creates double strand break. And those breaks will be fixed by HR. If you don't have UNG, then you massively accumulate double strand breaks, which will be fixed by RAD51, which is the effector of HR. So there is a crosstalk between misrepair of uracil and HR. A uracil that can be fixed during replication and that will be recognized by SMUG will lead to the collision of the replication fork and HR activation. All right, do we care? Yes. We care because if we do that in cells that do not have HR, then we kill the tumors, and that becomes very interesting. So this is our model, uracil, in the absence of UNG, or even if we push too much, that saturates the ability of UNG to excise uracil during replication, will be recognized by SMUG, which will create, at the next cell cycle, a block, a roadblock for the replication, which will be cleaved then by MERS-81, leading to RAD51 activation and resolution by HR. If we do that in cells that can do HR, then we have massive chromosome pulverization and translocation. Okay? And this leads to cell death. In the absence of HR, pure synthetic lethality, we can use these drugs which force your acid accumulation, isogenic model of wild type and BRCA2 knockout, and you see that the HR deficient cells die when we force your acid accumulation. And this is synthetic lethality experiments with UNG, so the enzyme that removes your acid replication. Same two different BRCA knockout clones and the controls. The controls are not affected by the knockdown of UNG while the BRCA cells die. So there is pure synthetic lethality between UNG and BRCA, just like BRCA and PARP or PARP and Pol Theta. So it's another one. But all that, and this is not nice as well, it's not working, but fine. And all that is maintained in case in tumors, BRCA tumors that become resistant to PARP. And that's becoming clinically extremely relevant because there is no therapy for those tumors. So this is not what this graph shows. But trust me, if we force your acid accumulation or if we knock down UNG, we kill BRCA tumors that are resistant to PARP, regardless of the mechanism of resistance. And because of that, and because there is no inhibitors that are actually available for UNG, we decided to screen and to try to develop the first molecule that would block UNG catalytic activity. We purified the enzyme, set up a test that measures the activity of UNG to excise uracil, screen large libraries of small molecules, identify a few hits, 23 hits that falls into various chemical series that are extremely potent inhibiting UNG. This is all in vitro, so the lab is trying to develop and foster the development of small molecules, inhibitors of UNG, or molecules that would force uracil misincorporation to be used, at least to be proposed to be used for the treatment of those tumors. Reinforcing the idea that DNA repair, studying the basis mechanism of DNA repair, can lead to maybe new opportunities for targeted therapies for cancer treatment. With that, I'm done. I would like to acknowledge the people who did the work. Camille for the work in mitosis, Daniele for the work on uracil. This is my lab as today. And our collaborators, Sophie Zinn at the CEA, who does NMR studies, and various collaborators that are listed here.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.